talking to me?
Funny, like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead, make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning. Today is September 19th, I believe, and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Lynn Venhouse.
Lynn Venhouse is back for 2 weeks in a row. You've been our special guest.
Yes.
We must like you.
Well, thank you. You like me. You really like me.
Yeah. You're okay.
You're available. You're
that's right. And you're dependable. And you see a lot of movies, so that's yes. you fit all the criteria.
Yes.
All right, well, we got a lot of movies to review and lots of stuff to talk about, so let's get started. Let's start with the top 12. You know, Michelle always calls in and does the top 12, but she can't do it anymore. She would always start with number 1. I think if you start with number 12 and work your way up to number 1, it becomes more suspenseful.
Yeah.
So what happened? Did Blair Witch beat Sully? Did Eddie Murphy's Mr. Church come in at number 1?
Is that has that been released?
Yeah, yes. That's showing it like
four. It's playing at Ronnie's.
Remember,
is it Ronnie's?
It's at right. It's yes. At the Chase Park Plaza.
You're kidding?
No,
well,
no screening.
No publicity on it at all.
Oh no, no.
I'm shocked.
Well, remember when Eddie Murphy, you know, would open a movie and it would be number 1? Remember that? It doesn't seem like that long ago.
Yeah, well, they've been touting it this for the last few weeks in, you know, Entertainment Tonight shows like that. Oh, this is his big Oscar, you know, worthy performance, and it opens here with nothing.
No.
One word.
And
Norbit.
There you go. Well, and it didn't even make the top 12. But Bad Moms did. It was number 12. It made $1.8 million.
Still bringing them in.
Hell or High Water is number 11 with $1.9 million. Pete's Dragon is number 10 with $2.0 million. Kubo and the Two Strings, $2.5 million. Number 8 is Wild Life. Well, I think that was opening weekend for Wild Life, wasn't it?
Yes, a Belgian animated
film. That's not very good for a kid's movie that opened wide.
Robinson Crusoe.
Yeah, that made $2.6. Suicide Squad is still hanging in there, number 4, or number 7, I should say,
yes.
With $4.7 mil. When the Bow Breaks debuted this weekend.
Well,
and that
no,
was over
I think it's the second weekend.
Yeah, it is
oh,
the second
it is?
Weekend.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I stand corrected. It was number 6 with 5.5. Don't Breathe is still in the top 5 at number 5. It made 5.6. Snowden. That actually did pretty good for Snowden.
Yeah, I'm surprised.
It did 8.0. Bridget Jones' Baby. Aw. Was number 3. 8.2. Does she have a baby in the film?
Yes, she does.
Yes, yes.
But she doesn't know who the dad is or something?
Well, oh, it's figured yeah, out. Yeah, but it's
what a slut.
It's,
Bridget Jones, the slut they should have called it.
It's quite the prolonged labor scene.
Oh, okay. I have no intention of seeing that. That made 8.2. Number 2 was Blair Witch. And it opened this weekend, but it only made 9.7. I thought that would have done a little better.
Yeah, that's a little surprising because it's only about 90 minutes, too. So you get lots of screenings.
Well, it has been, you know.
It's been done before.
It's a horror film.
But still, that's surprising. And Sully came in way ahead of everybody. So I saw Sully, by the way. I saw it Friday night.
Oh, you did?
I saw it at the Chase Park Plaza before I went down to the Moolah.
I hope you enjoyed
it. I did enjoy it. It was very good.
Yeah.
$22.0 million for Sully. So that continues to be number 1. What opens this weekend? Magnificent Seven. You think that'll beat Sully?
That's a tough call being a Western and all that, but it does have a pretty high profile.
Yeah.
And Antoine Fuqua, an action.
Yeah.
And
we got the
marquee stars.
Yeah, we got The Storks, another animated film coming
out. Oh,
yeah,
that's right. Storks.
And Jerry Lewis's movie just opens at the Plaza Frontenac, Max Rose.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have The Queen of Kacha with
Lupino
Nyong'o and David Aiello.
Oh, Yellow-O.
Oh, Yellow-O, yes.
That's how you say his name.
But because you met him.
I did meet him.
I met him, too, yeah. He was nice enough.
Yes.
Little guy.
Has a wonderful British accent.
About 5'8", maybe. They always look bigger on the big screen, don't they?
Well, he towers above
except,
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, except that I was talking about last week how Daniel Radcliffe just looks up at everybody in his films. It's bizarre. All right, let's get started with some of these reviews. You guys both saw Snowden?
I work as a private contractor for the NSA, for the CIA. I've worked in various jobs in the intelligence industry for the last 9 years. Listen, they're going to come for me. And now that we've made contact, they're going to come for all of you, too.
How about we just start with your name? Okay.
My name is Edward Joseph Snowden.
Yes.
Who reviewed Snowden for We Are Movie Geeks?
That Kate reviewed it.
She gave it what, 3.5, I think?
Yeah, 3.5, 4 stars, something like that. Yeah,
that's low
yeah.
for her. She usually grades pretty high. Did you review it for yeah. Belleville News Democrat? How
I
many
did,
stars did you give?
And also for the Times, I gave it 3 of 4.
3 of 4. All right.
Yes.
So it sounds like it's imperfect. Who wants to talk about Snowden? Lynn?
Go ahead, Lynn. Ladies okay. first.
Well, do you believe he's a hero or a traitor? It's not going to change your mind. And no. Oliver Stone, we know where he lies because he's the director and the co-writer. But I thought it was well told. It's a compelling story of our times, mm-hmm. illegal surveillance, and the dense data is handled well. I think the editing is very well. I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt does a wonderful job as Snowden. He sounds just like him. The Hong Kong scenes with the documentary filmmaker Laura Poitras from Citizen Four and the columnist from The Guardian, Glenn Greenwald, that's Melissa Leo and Zachary Quinto. I think those are the best. And then Tom Wilkinson is a boss at the paper. So those work best. I think the romance with Shailene Woodley is less successful.
Yeah, it's a little weak. Her character's a little weak, yeah.
But I found the CIA inner workings very interesting, and Riz Ifans and Nicolas Cage.
Bravo to Stone for giving Nick Cage a nice, juicy
That's
role.
Right. Well,
in
you know
a
it's a good movie.
Film.
You know it's a good movie if Nick Cage is in it.
Well, he's really good in it.
Oh, he's Nick Cage is great. I love
and
Nick Cage.
He makes so many lousy movies, you forget how good he can be
yeah.
yes.
in a good movie with good material.
Yes.
That's right, like Ghost Rider 2.
Oh, God.
Oh. All right. So is it dense like JFK?
Yeah.
Does it have all these characters and this and that?
It's pretty dense. Stone goes in for a few too many dramatic flourishes. He wants to shoot everything, give you a sense of paranoia, I guess, through a lot of it. You're always, seeing mysterious people hovering around Stone, and you're wondering, are they spying on him? And then, the whole thing with people being able to access your video camera on your laptops is another thing. That's why they show him always putting a Band-Aid over the little camera on the laptop.
Oh.
And, you can say the stuff with Shailene Woodley doesn't work that well. And you're kind of taken aback when it first starts because Gordon-Levitt is trying to affect the real Edward Snowden's voice, and it's a little distracting for a bit, but you kind of get used to it and you get into the flow of it. And, lots of clips of real life people in it, and Stone, is trying to be fairly even handed. Mm-hmm. I know one of our critics thought he was coming down too hard on the current administration, but it actually starts during the former administration. So, our many of our candidates from this current election weigh in via video clips, and it's pretty well done. I will say I did start to glaze over a couple of times with some of the techno. It's about 2 hours, 15 minutes or so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah,
a little long.
Short for Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah, considering. Rice Ifans, though, he's kind of sinister from the start,
Yes.
He kind of looks more lizard-like than he did in Amazing Spider-Man, for goodness sakes.
But he's so good. Well, he's such a good actor.
And
good,
but Levitt, you say, is good?
Yes.
Levitt's very good.
It's not getting great reviews, though. I think it's only at about 50%
over
it's tomato meter.
It's mixed, but I think what is really interesting is because if we've all seen Citizen Four, it won the Oscar and was very much an award-winning film 2 years ago. He shows the aftermath, like the changes in legislation because of all this. So that's a nice end to it, I think.
Yeah, nice little coda there. But it's like I say, it's pretty well done. But like I say, the technical babble can get a little much at times, but they try to keep it reasonably toned down so that you can kind of understand what's going on. And I've heard people saying that this is the best Oliver Stone in years, but I can't recall the last Oliver Stone film I've
Savages.
Seen.
Savages.
That was his. Well, yeah, that
I think
was
that was his last film.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This was after W, I guess, huh? Yeah.
Oh yeah, W was quite a while ago. No, Savages was just a couple years ago.
Yeah, Savages was the drug runner thing.
Yeah,
there,
with
so,
Blake
yeah.
Lively. That was the first thing I saw Blake Lively.
Yeah, that was this is better than that. I will say that. But a lot of people saying this is his best work since JFK. I don't know about that, but it's pretty strong in his resume.
Nixon was pretty good, I thought.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, Nixon was pretty good. It was pretty sympathetic to him. I was really surprised,
All right. So. Well, good. So you guys sort of like Snowden, that you think it's flawed, sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. It's a good Sunday afternoon, get away from the rain type of movie.
There you go. Let's move on. You guys saw this movie that was directed by John Krasinski called The Hollers.
What is with you and Dad? He fired me, John.
I didn't even know you were working for him.
Yeah, you should really call more.
What's this?
Ice cream and pretzels. One of my mom's favorite things.
Hey, how about heart attacks? Is that one of her favorite things, too?
What's, yes. What's that title mean? Is that their last name?
That is their last name. It's about the Holler family out of somewhere in Ohio.
They don't ever say the town, yeah, you, but it's you, a small town.
At one point, you see signs pointing to Cleveland and to Cincinnati, so you're not quite sure.
Clues.
Yes, yes. But it starts out in the home, the family home of the Hollers, and it's Margot Martindale, the wonderful Margot Martindale, as Sally Holler, the matriarch of the family. The patriarch is Richard Jenkins, and still living with them is eldest son, who's played by Charlotte Copley.
Oh, yeah.
And the opening is very funny because it's the morning. He's got to go to the bathroom really bad, and both bathrooms are occupied, and he's waiting and waiting. He finally has to improvise in the kitchen, and they hear a commotion in the upstairs bathroom, and there Sally is almost unconscious on the floor with her curling iron burning into her arm. And they take her into the hospital, and they contact the prodigal Holler son, played by John Krasinski, who's also the director, and call him in and say that she's had a seizure, she's in the hospital, and it looks like it's a brain tumor. And Krasinski is kind of under a lot of stress. He doesn't like his job that much. Plus, his girlfriend, played by Anna Kendrick, is about to give birth any second. So she provides him with airline tickets, and he flies in there and goes to see them. And it turns out she is going to have this big operation. Plus, he learns that the family business, a plumbing and heating business, is going under. That Copley, the elder son, had actually been employed by his dad and been let go. And that's why he's living in the house there on the den. That and the fact that he's just gone through a divorce, and he's really upset about not being able to see his kids. And he's even more upset by the fact that his ex-wife is dating the youth pastor, Reverend Dan, played by singer Josh Groban, in a very funny role.
I don't know who that
and
is.
And it's all about this upcoming surgery and you know, taking adult responsibility. And another funny moment or bit in it is provided by Charlie Day.
I love him.
Horrible Bosses, who is the nurse taking care of Krasinski's mom. He's a classmate of Krasinski, and he is married and had a child with Krasinski's high school girlfriend, Gwen, played by the wonderful Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Is this John Krasinski's directorial debut?
No, this is his second directorial feature. This is 13 Conversations with Hideous Men. Was that the name of it?
A Brief Encounter.
Brief Encounter with Hideous Men.
From the David Foster Wallace book.
I don't remember that. That must not have played here.
Well, I don't think it got too much play.
So how are his instincts as a
he's good.
Director.
You know, it's a very warm and witty family comedy drama, and so
a dramedy, as we
say.
Yes,
and it's very, you know, it resonates with real life, and the cast is what sells it. As Jim said, it's just full of all these wonderful characters, and you can't do better than Margot Martindale and Richard Jenkins as parents.
Oh, just they're fabulous and everything.
You know,
yeah.
And John Krasinski, so likable. He played Jim on The Office, and he's just one of those guys that you root for. And the biggest surprise is Charlotte Copley, because he was in District 9, and
he's a New Zealand.
South African.
South African.
That's right.
But he doesn't look anything like John Krasinski.
Neither does Richard Jenkins, really, or Margot Martindale.
Right. But he's a mess, and it's just funny because he's the older brother whose life is a total mess. Charlie Day makes me laugh every time I see him. He's just one of those guys, and the looks on his faces. So it's just one of those very pleasant, nice.
Who reviewed it?
I reviewed it. I think I gave it 4.5. I really enjoyed it. And Margot Martindale, I'd love to see her get a nomination for this.
Yeah,
she's terrific. Well, you never know.
You never know.
You guys didn't think Whiplash would be up for Best Picture either, but it was.
Well,
so,
I gave 3.5.
You gave 3.5 out of 4.
Four.
All right. So you guys are pretty strong on this movie, The Hollers.
Yeah.
You can identify with it. Right. Let's put it like that.
And it's only 90 minutes, for God's sake.
All right. Let's move on. Jim saw Queen of Katwe. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did.
That stars David Oyelowo and the Oscar-winning actress from 12 Years a Slave, whose name escapes me.
Lupita Nyong'o.
Yes.
Yes.
What's this movie about,
This actually opens this Friday. It is about, well, the Queen refers to the game of chess. And this is actually the current entry in a series of sort of sports-oriented family films that Disney has produced, this time in conjunction with ESPN. It's actually based on an article in ESPN Magazine. It's rated PG-13, so it's – or not PG-13. It's just PG, actually.
Yeah.
So it's meant for
wholesome.
The whole family. It's wholesome. But, boy, a lot of it is very dark. It covers the years about 2007 to 2012, mostly set in Uganda. And it's about this family living in abject poverty, headed by Lupita Nyong'o, who plays Naku, the mother, the widowed mother of four children. And she's got two daughters, and the youngest daughter is Fiona Matusi, who is played by Madina Nalwanga. And she is helping the family by selling corn on the streets. They barely are making you know, ends meet. They're about to get kicked out of this little shed of a house they're in. She's got two younger brothers, and she follows the Fiona character follows her younger brother into the shack. He's wondering what he's doing when he leaves school, and it turns out he is going to a chess club that is conducted by the David Oyelowo's character, Robert Katende, who is an engineer, but he's making a living actually playing soccer, being a ringer at soccer games. And he started this this chess club sort of after school thing for kids, so that they can go up against the pros, the big city kids, they call them. And this young Fiona is mesmerized by chess, and she becomes a prodigy. And the film is basically about her going up the ladder and you know, going through championships, much to the concern of her mother, who doesn't really understand this whole thing, thinks it's a gambling den or something.
Well, they don't
like
show
that.
Much of the chess in the trailer. I had no idea it was about chess until you just told me.
Yeah.
They kind of play that down.
So that's a sport, I guess. Yeah.
What was
so,
the chess movie last year with Tobey Maguire?
Oh, yes.
It was about Bobby Fischer.
Yes, I'm trying to think of the title of it, though.
Maybe that bombed and they didn't want... I mean, maybe they wanted to play down the chess angle because they didn't want people to avoid it.
But yeah, it is very... it's a very well-done film. Like I say, a lot of it is very dark when they're, having the struggle to make ends meet. They get kicked out of their place and they're scrounging on the streets. But it's a nice, uplifting story. I wish it had a little more teeth to it. It's directed by Mira Nair, who I guess Mississippi Masala was her first big film.
Yeah,
she's
and Wedding. There was the something years. Wedding she did.
Yeah.
So Bombay Wedding?
Monsoon Wedding?
Yeah. Or Monsoon Wedding.
So it runs like a little bit long at 2 hours, yeah. But the performers are engaging. David Oyelowo is terrific. So is
David
Lupita.
Oyelowo.
Yes, Lupita Nyong'o is very good. Mm-hmm. And, it's okay. It's a nice family film. But
so you're going to be reviewing it for WeirdMovieGeeks.com?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a review. I'll maybe give it 3 stars.
And you're seeing it today or tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm seeing it tonight. This is the first movie that Lupita Nyong'o's actually acted in, not just voice, because she was the voice in Star Wars.
And Jungle Book,
And Jungle Book, but this is the first one she's actually on screen as an actor.
That's not quite true. She was in the one, she was in Nonstop with Liam Neeson she won the Oscar.
No, I'm talking about, she was?
Yeah.
Well, maybe she made that before, though.
Yeah,
maybe.
She did
of a smallish part.
So anyway, since her Oscar for 12 Years a Slave, this is her first big movie.
All right, so you guys like The Queen of Katwe, but you don't love
it. Yeah, she's
so
believable as a mother, but she must have had the kids very, very young, because the eldest daughter is maybe about 18 or 19, so.
All right. I saw Disappointment Room. Lucky me.
You're the one.
That's right.
Dan, you got that look that concerns me.
Don't get sick again, Mommy.
There's no one else here.
It was a horror movie, and it stars Kate Beckinsale, and it is directed by DJ Caruso. And I watched the trailer, and it said, from the director of Disturbia. Like, anybody remembers that lousy Shia LaBeouf movie?
Well, that was, also Eagle Eye. That was another Shia LaBeouf film he directed.
That's
his prodigy, his muse.
I have some advice for DJ Caruso. If you're going to make a movie that has the word disappointment in the title, it had better be good. Otherwise, you're just setting yourself up. Unfortunately, this movie's not very good. It's a haunted house movie. Very standard, very cliched, very generic. It's about Kate Beckinsale and her husband, played by Mel Rado. Have you ever heard of him?
Never.
Okay. No. Well, he's apparently an actor who plays her husband, and they move... after a tragedy where they lose a small child in an accident, they move to North Carolina from New York, and they decide to rehab this home out in the woods, which is never a good thing to do in a horror movie. Yes. She's an architect, so she has experience doing this kind of thing. And they're rehabbing the house, and things are going along okay. They have a son, too. And Kate discovers this hidden room up off the attic, and she finds this skeleton key that opens this room. So she goes inside, and all of a sudden there's these ghosts in there, and there's the ghost of the previous owner, and he is played by Gerald McRaney. And apparently she finds out from the local historian that Gerald McRaney and his wife had a deformed child, so they kept this deformed child in this room that they called disappointment room. I guess if you have a child that's not perfect, you put them in the disappointment room. Kind of reminded me. I remember the Shuttered Room with Carol Lindley and Gig Young,
yes,
where they had the deformed guy who was locked away in the room. It's kind of like that, except in this one they're ghosts, and that one they actually left the guy in the room.
Did you ever see Basket Case?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
Belial. Anyway, this is just every cliche you can imagine, but it's really kind of dull stuff. It's PG-13. Well, maybe it's rated R now that I think of it, because there is sort of a bloody bludgeoning with a hammer scene where they bludgeon a child to death at one point, which is kind of... But that's like the only violent scene. It's kind of disturbing stuff.
And Gerald is such a nice Simon brother.
apparently this movie was filmed a couple of years ago, and they just dusted it off and re-released it. Maybe they're trying to cash in on Kate Beckinsale and her performance in Love and Friendship earlier this year. I don't know. She's a beautiful woman to a fault, and she wears all this makeup that's just perfectly applied, and her hair is perfectly styled. It's like she's in a freaking Revlon commercial instead of this horror movie where she's trying to rehab this home. It gets to be a little distracting, but I guess when a movie's this lousy and this dull, you're looking for things to get it distracted by. I can't really recommend the Disappointment Room. It's just one cliche, haunted house cliche after another. They recreate scenes like, oh, there's a little girl who's dressed exactly like the twin girls from The Shining that just sort of pops up in the attic and stands there staring at the little boy just like in The Shining. I kept waiting for her twin to show up and join her. But that's typical of this movie. They just keep referring to other horror movies because they had nothing original to say. I would say The Disappointment Room is a disappointment, but that would be too easy because my expectations are pretty low, so it wasn't really a disappointment. It's just kind of a lousy horror movie, and I don't recommend it, and nobody's going to see it, and it'll be up on cable or something pretty soon.
It's too bad because it's written by Wentworth
yeah,
Miller, and you liked his last film that he wrote. He wrote Stoker.
That's so, right. He did,
and he's a fine actor, but... Whew. That sounds like a stinker.
Yep.
Is that the guy from Prison Break?
And Legends of Tomorrow, Captain Cold.
Yeah, and The Human Stain. He was the young Anthony Hopkins, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe so, yes.
Okay.
All right. So I don't recommend The Disappointment Room. It did not get reviewed at our site. It actually opened over a week ago, and surprisingly, they held it over a second week, so I went and saw it. But if I was to review it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com, I would give it a lonely 1 out of 5 stars. Let's move on to Bridget Jones and her little baby. This is the third Bridget Jones movie with Renee Zellweger. And was Colin Firth in the first two?
Yes.
So he's back as well.
He's Mark Darcy.
You know where? Here's an interesting trivia. You know where Colin Firth went to high school?
Yes.
Parkway
West. Isn't that bizarre? Or Central, or one of those parkways. Yes.
Apparently his father was a scientist who worked at Monsanto, and they lived in St. Louis for a few years.
Yeah, junior high. He went to junior high here. He talked about it when he was on all the talk shows before his Oscar.
Huh. I didn't know that until this past weekend.
Yeah.
He should be on the St. Louis Walk of Fame then, according to the rules.
Colin Firth makes a movie no matter what. So, I mean, I'm a girl, so I have a different opinion than you guys about Bridget Jones's baby.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Yes, I do.
A few months ago, I met Jack.
So it lasted 6 hours.
What lasted 6 hours?
A puppet show that Auntie Bridget went to.
Still a lot I don't know about him.
Well, how much do you need to know?
He has a pretty nice-sized puppet.
So you liked it, huh?
Yes.
Did you review it for the Kirk
of
Buckley Times?
I know I did it for the Belleville News.
And how many stars did you give it?
I gave it 3 of 4.
Right.
If you are a fan of chick flicks, then it's chick flick bliss. Sharon Maguire, who directed the first one. I will say I didn't see the middle one, but I heard just horrible, bad things. I enjoyed the first one very much. And this one pits who's the baby daddy, Colin Firth, or Patrick Dempsey, who's this American dating site mogul.
Wasn't Colin Firth also the possible baby daddy in Mamma Mia?
Yeah, he was. Sure, he was the
so he's been kind of typecast.
Well, yeah, you know.
Maybe they'll remake Buena Sierra, Mrs. Campbell, and cast Colin Firth on that one as well.
Since his Oscar, he hasn't really made Oscar-worthy films, but, you know, he was in that awful one with Nicole Kidman. But yeah, they make a case for each. I'm not going to spoil the outcome of it, but I thought it was very satisfactory. Emma Thompson is a hoot, and she co-wrote it.
Who's she play?
She plays the OBGYN, and she whips off great zingers. It's wonderful. Now, Hugh Grant's character from the first two movies is dealt with in an amusing way. You know, he's not in it.
They kill him off in the first scene.
I'm not saying, but okay, everybody in it, you know, they're pros, so as chick flicks go, you could do worse, but I enjoyed it thoroughly.
Hard to imagine.
Did Jim say it?
So he endured it.
And Jim loved it as well, right?
I gave it 1.5 stars.
Oh, 1.5 out of 5. That's not very good.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, it is not made for me. And I don't know, thinking about it over the weekend, I realized that Bridget Jones is sort of a live-action version of the Kathy comic strip, which I just abhorred in newspapers many years ago, in which she just fretted about being too hefty and, you know, about Irving and this and that. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is tiresome. And this thing, I just could not get into. For one thing, it's well over 2 hours, which is just a killer time for a comedy.
Yeah.
It just drones on and on. There's an unnecessary subplot about Bridget's mother running for public office, which just kind of goes nowhere. And it's just up for some easy laughs. And some of the characters are just acting so ridiculously stupid. They have a variation of the walk this way gag, in which Bridget is working on a half-hour news program, and she's hooked in to the host of it, to her pal Miranda, and she says, I know you don't know what to ask this guy, but just repeat what I repeat. And of course, while she's interviewing this high-profile guy, Bridget gets a call and is talking on the cell phone, and the newscaster is asking the questions that she's asking of that Bridget's repeating into the phone, and it's just ridiculous. And I'm thinking, nobody is this stupid. Come on.
Well, it is a fantasy.
Oh, it is a complete fantasy. The whole thing with them glamping at the music festival, and that's how Bridget meets Patrick Dempsey's character.
That's pretty implausible.
Yeah, and it's just a thankless role for Mr. Dempsey. This is not going to make people forget him as Dr. McDreamy. Mm-hmm. And Colin Firth's character seems to have a stick up him through most of it.
He's kind of dull,
you know? Yeah. Every once in a while he'll say something funny, but I kept on waiting for Emma Thompson to show up again. It's like, come on! Do a whole movie about this character. She's interesting.
So you haven't read the book. It's from Helen Fielding.
Never.
It's from Helen Fielding's bestseller, and it's a worldwide bestseller.
Now, wasn't she nominated for the first one? Or am I mistaken?
No, Renee, no.
She was?
But she also co-wrote the script. Well, a lot of it is from the first one, Bridget Jones's Diary, so if you've never seen that, you don't know. But what I did like was Renee Zellweger's totally believable as this English career woman. That she's a news producer, but she's also a bit of a mess, mishaps and everything. But what I like, the subplot about the newsroom, is these, as she calls them, ironic bearded hipsters come in to run everything.
That chafes
the veterans. And so there's some pretty funny jokes about that. So that's, that was a little fun aspect, but it is a tad too long.
Oh,
that's why I only gave it 3 of 4. And but if you're a fan of the first one, you will really like this one. And if you didn't see the middle one, you don't need to.
All right. So Lynn liked Bridget Jones' Baby because she's a chick, and Jim didn't because he's a dude.
Because I'm all macho.
Let's move on. Speaking of macho, you can't get any more macho than the Magnificent Seven.
Yes, good transition.
Or at least the one from the 60s, which had Charles Bronson and Steve McQueen and James Coburn and Yul Brynner and all these great rugged actors. This new one has Denzel and a bunch other guys. I haven't seen it yet. Have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay, so you guys have both seen it.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about it. Is it any good?
Man carries a gun, he tends to use it. Dan, you dead? Pity.
I had just ordered a drink from that man.
It's okay. You know, it's all right. It's not the best remake of a Western. I think a better remake of a Western was 310 to Yuma a few years ago.
Yeah, yes. Or True Grit.
Yes. Yeah, or True Grit also. Yes. But this is serviceable. It looks like that the guys are having fun. Actually, you know, if we were having as much fun in the audience as the actors were, they look like they're enjoying playing cowboy. And it basically takes the same setup from the Magnificent Seven, which in turn took it from Seven Samurai, with a village being terrorized. Now, this time, it's not a Mexican village,
right,
because this would be kind of un-PC to have the gringos come in and save the poor Mexicans from the banditos. This time around, it's a place, I don't know if it's Colorado or Wyoming,
it's
somewhere
the wild,
there.
Wild West.
Yes, yes.
Pioneers.
And it's a sweet little town, like I think it's called Rose Creek, and there's a mining set up outside of town, but the owner of that mining camp wants to expand, and he wants to take over the town, and he's generously offered everyone, I think he said 20 bucks an acre, which is dirt cheap.
They're so upset.
But the thing is, if they don't take his generous offer, he's going to kill them all. And he is played by, his character is Bartholomew Bogue, that's an imposing name, he's played by Peter Skarsgård, who plays it with a permanent sneer on his face through most of it.
Yes, did you know he was born at Scott Air Force Base?
Peter
Skarsgård was born at Scott Air Force Base. Yes, he's very Snidely Whiplash in it.
Yeah. Well, he's even more than Ewan McGregor was earlier this year in Jane Got Her Gun, and this is a better film than that, I'll tell you.
Well, but, Antoine Fuqua can do action.
Yeah.
And I think the gun...
Equalizer was good.
The showdown at the end, that's when it kicks in. I don't think the characters have much rapport.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Denzel and Ethan Hawke, who were both in Training Day together, they have a nice chemistry together, and they have some scenes, but some of the characters are very underdeveloped, don't you think, Jim?
Well, I had a problem with Vincent D'Onofrio as the bounty hunter or tracker, Jack Horn, as he's this big burly guy. He looks like a charging bear going after people, but D'Onofrio, or maybe it was he and the director, decided to give him this sort of high-pitched voice, and it was kind of distracting and disconcerting. Mm. I was like, why did they make that choice?
And they don't know what to do with Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
Because he's being charming.
He doesn't seem to fit in his character. And then now Denzel, of course, can do anything, you know. And I think he matches with Fuqua. I think it's probably Fuqua's best effort since Training Day. But it just doesn't make the mark of the original. It's not going to make anybody forget.
All right. So are you reviewing it for Weird Movie Geeks, Jim?
I think so. I don't think anybody else.
It should put Shia LaBeouf in it. Probably
another.
And eliminate him right away.
Yeah. How many stars would you give it, Jim? Out of five.
I would maybe give it 3.5.
3.5. How many stars would you give it out of four, Lynn? This is so confusing.
3. I'm going to do 3 or 4. But the big breakout star is Haley Bennett.
Never heard of her.
She's the lone woman in it. Well, she's going to be in.
She's not one of the seven,
girl
though.
On the train.
No. She's the one that recruits them, actually, from town. Yeah.
She's a widow. She's a widow who seeks revenge and righteousness.
All right. So
it's, it's one of those, but the music, which is the calling card that everybody
knows. Elmer Bernstein's.
We don't hear it till the end, and you have to really hear the whole thing over the end credits.
Yeah.
So if you're thinking you're going to get it, you got to wait.
Yeah.
All right, so that opens Friday, The Magnificent Seven. Tomorrow we're seeing Denial. That's with Rachel Weisz and Tom Wilkinson, and that's about Holocaust deniers. Is it a courtroom thing?
Timothy Spall? Okay.
Yes, it's based on a real story about this guy claimed that the Holocaust did not happen, and Rachel Weisz is like, oh,
she says
yes,
it
did. So he sues her for libel. Or slander.
Interesting. All right. Well, I guess we'll be back to review that and whenever it gets ready to open.
It screams importance.
And Thursday, Miss Peregrine School, wasn't it full time?
For Peculiar Children?
And then when's that open?
That opens, I think, the 30th.
Okay.
Yes. And that's with Ava Green and Sam Jackson.
It looks
Asa
really good.
Butterfield.
It's got fighting. Any movie with fighting skeletons is a must-see.
It's
from Tim Burton, and he's hit and miss.
This is a book, apparently, that people really love. And some of the people who read the book are worried that they've changed quite a bit in the movie.
Oh. Well, the people who read books always think that. So let them worry.
Yeah, let him be surprised, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Yes. All right, so we'll see. So we'll be back to review that. I guess we'll be back to review that next week.
Yeah.
So that'll be fun. Another thing I want to mention this Thursday night, which is the 22nd, or is it the 21st?
That's the 22nd.
22nd. Yes. My friend, our St. Louis Film Critics Association colleague, Diane Carson, has made a documentary. We'll be showing at Webster University. It is called Other People's Footage, Copyright and Fair Use. And it is about the legalities of taking people's footage from their films and using it for your own films or your own purpose or for whatever reason you might want to do that. And it's an interesting documentary and a lot of talking heads talking about cases where people have been sued and this and that and when it's legal and where it's legal to snip other people's footage and use it in your own and things like that. And I guess this is a subject that's near and dear to Diane's heart. So she'll be there along with her co-director. And this is Thursday night at 7:30 over at Webster University. So go out and support Diane and local filmmakers in this documentary. Again, it's called Other People's Footage, Copyright and Fair Use. And that's at Webster University on Thursday. Also, there's a documentary opening this weekend. Or I shouldn't say opening this weekend. It's only playing this weekend, Friday and Saturday night. It is Morgan Spurlock's new documentary.
Oh.
It is called Rats.
I can't.
And
I can't.
It's about what it sounds like it's about. It's about Morgan. You know, Morgan Spurlock's is sort of a Michael Moore wannabe who puts himself in the center of his documentaries. And he did it with what was the one where he got on McDonald's?
Super Size Me.
And
he changed the McDonald's menu.
Yeah.
He did.
Well, good. Something positive came out of that. And apparently he's gone around the world and looked at rats and how rats are treated in different cultures, et cetera, et cetera. So that's Friday and Saturday, and that's the only time it's going to play theatrically in St. Louis. I think it's going to one of the cable channels.
Yeah, it's going right at midnight all those
Yeah,
days.
Midnight.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it'll be on the small screen. On the big screen, we have Mean Girls.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm Janice.
This is Damien.
Watch out! New meat coming through!
This map shows the school's central nervous system, the cafeteria.
You got your cool Asians, burnouts, jocks, the greatest people you will ever meet, and the worst.
That has a
good movie, Tina Fey.
Yeah, and what's her name?
Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so you go to the Tivoli and see a movie about nasty critters who spread diseases. But enough about Lindsay Lohan. You can go see Mean Girls, and who else is in that?
Rachel McAdams is the villain.
Yes,
a mean girl.
And Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I saw that movie, and it was new, and I haven't seen it since, but I guess I didn't know who those actresses were at the time. Lindsay Lohan was really pretty talented. If you remember, what was the one where she was
Parent Trap.
Yeah, I mean, she was really cute and fun in that movie, and in Mean Girls.
And Herbie. Shining star, and then she frittered it all away, and now she's tabloid fodder.
Yeah.
Also, that Max Rose film with Jerry Lewis supposed to open Friday
It opens Friday, and it's just at Plaza Frontenac. I was invited as an AARP Missouri member to the screening, but it filled up fast, and also they are not screening it for critics, but they've provided a link for us to watch Jerry is coming to the Family Arena in St. Charles on November 12th, and he's going to be honored at the St. Louis International Film Festival.
Yeah.
Cliff did tell me that they are going to run Nutty Professor.
Now, Chris told me they were running The Ladies Man.
This is before Snowden. Snowden, I talked to him.
Okay. Yeah. I would rather see The Ladies Man, just because I've seen Another Professor many, many times. And all right. Well, something to look forward to. Jerry Lewis. What's that movie called?
Max Rose.
All right, and that opens Friday at the Frontenac. All right, well, maybe we can see that and review it next week. Speaking of the Tivoli, they're showing Lawrence of Arabia Wednesday night. This is part of their Classics on the Loop series. I've heard attendance was pretty good for Ben-Hur. This past week they did Sound of Music. And this week is Lawrence of Arabia. 7 o'clock, Wednesday night at the Tivoli. It's $7. There's a bunch of La Dolce Vita and Seven Samurai and Dr. Zhivago and Gone with the Wind are all coming up on that for that film series.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy hitters.
That's right. And, of course, I got to plug a couple of my things because that's what I like to do. A week from Wednesday is going to be the King Baggett Tribute. This is a big show that I've been working on. The second time I've done it. The first time I did it was at the St. Louis International Film Festival 2 years ago. I'm doing it again, this time at the Missouri History Museum. That's next Wednesday, the 28th. King Baggett was, of course, a silent film star from St. Louis who 100 years ago was a huge deal, and he's been sort of forgotten because all of his films are lost, but One of his films that's not lost is Ivanhoe, a 1913 silent version of Ivanhoe. So we're going to show that with live music by the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra. And you'll get to hear my lecture about this silent film star, King Bagot. So it's free. It's next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. At the Missouri History Museum, you get a free movie, you get free live music, you get a free lecture by me. Johnny Rabbit's going to be introducing the program. So don't miss that. Also, I'm going to plug Coffin Joe. I'll be plugging this for the next couple of weeks. You're going to get tired of hearing this. Coffin Joe, A Strange Night with Coffin Joe, Sunday, October 9th at 7:30 at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. Coffin Joe was a Brazilian horror filmmaker. Real bizarre, violent, extreme stuff. These films were not imported to the U.S., so horror fans would occasionally see photos of them in monster magazines, and they were very tempting because they looked so bizarre. It wasn't until the 90s that we finally got to see some of these on bootleg VHSs and eventually on DVD. They're really crazy stuff. And this Brazilian horror filmmaker, Coffin Joe, his real name is... Jose Mojica Marins. He made most of these in the 60s and 70s, and then in 2008 he decided to make a new Coffin Joe movie. He was an old man, and he needed somebody to play the young Coffin Joe in some flashback sequences. So this friend of mine, who's St. Louisan named Raymond Castile, he looks just like Coffin Joe, and he had dressed up as Coffin Joe in some cosplay, and he had made a short film called A Blind Date with Coffin Joe, where he played the young Coffin Joe. Well, somehow Coffin Joe down in Brazil saw some pictures of Raymond in his Coffin Joe cosplay and flew Raymond down to Brazil to play him in these flashback sequences as a young Coffin Joe. So Raymond's going to be there in costume, and he and I are going to be sort of co-hosting this. He'll be speaking Portuguese, of course, because he's Coffin Joe, doggone it. This is going to be really a unique and fun night, and really your only chance to see Coffin Joe movies on the big screen. So again, that's Sunday, October 9th at 7:30 at Webster University's Moore Auditorium. All right, enough shameless plugs for me. Jim, you wanted to talk a little bit about the Civil Wars, Captain America Civil Wars. Is that still one of your favorite movies of the year?
Oh, my gosh, even more so after picking up the excellent Blu-ray last week.
And did you listen to the commentary?
Yes, I did. I did that while I was recording the Emmys last night. I watched it with the commentary tracks. The commentary track is with the Russo brothers and the two screenwriters, Chris Marcus and Stephen McFeely. And it's almost like a class about how to make blockbusters. It's really interesting. And they have so much respect for the actors in it. Particularly, you'll have even more admiration for Robert Downey Jr. The way that he collaborates with the writers, spending part of his weekend going over scenes and seeing if he could add anything to it. Especially in that wonderful sequence in which they introduce Tom Holland as Peter Parker. Downey was determined to make the kid look as best as he could in that scene, and it is a wonderful scene. And yeah, it's terrific. They answer some questions, some criticisms lobbed at the Marvel films about whether or not the whole Marvel studio universe is one big franchise, whether it's more of a TV show, and they address that. They talk about how every film is really different in tone. The tone of, say, Ant-Man, which is more like a kids-friendly movie, is much different than Winter Soldier or Civil War, and it's really entertaining. There's also some great documentaries on there. There's about a 40-minute documentary about the making of the film, going into the evolution of each of the characters and their approach to it. Also about how they had to really fight to include Giant Man in this. They had to, loosen up the purse strings at Marvel because they knew it was going to cost quite a bit to have become giant-sized Paul Rudd. And then there's separate documentaries about the history of the characters, the road to Civil War with Iron Man and the road to Civil War with Captain America. A very funny gag reel, and the film itself looks just gorgeous on Blu-ray. If you've got a brand-new system, a brand-new, big screen and Blu-ray player, there's nothing better to pop.
Did you say this Blu-ray is loaded with extras?
See it's pretty loaded, although I'd heard that they'd done an extra scene. Maybe it was just for promotion. It was about what Thor was doing during Civil War, so yeah. I might have to look that up.
I wonder
online.
If maybe 6 months from now they'll come out with a more loaded edition. Seems like they do that sometimes. They make a lot of money and then they come out with even more extras, so you have to spend your money again to get the thing.
It's annoying to get a DVD
upgrade.
And then like a month later, it's the 20th anniversary special edition.
Yeah,
I don't think Marvel plays that game, though. Some people do that, Warner's, DC, but others don't want to give you the full deal first time out of the gate.
All right. Well, good so to hear. Jim good recommends to hear. The Captain America Civil War's Blu-ray, which will probably sell a gazillion copies. Did it come out this past Tuesday?
Yeah, this past a week ago Tuesday.
All right. What else can we talk about? The Toronto Film Festival announced their winners, but did they do the actors? I didn't see any actors. All I saw was film titles.
Yeah, I don't know if they do. Do they do actors?
I didn't see anything.
I don't know because Venice did.
Yeah, and Damien Chazelle, who did Whiplash a couple of years ago, he's got a new movie called La La Land, and it stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, and it's a musical, right?
Yes, and you know they
it won best.
They paired so well in Crazy Stupid Love
and Gangster Squad. Well, we don't.
We don't want to talk about that, but. Yeah. Yo, that's forgettable, really. But it looks very much. Remember Francis Ford Coppola's movie, One from the Heart?
Yeah, Nastassja Kinski.
Terry Garr. And it bankrupted his Zoetrope studio and everything. But it looks like that in a way, but probably way better since it won the best film. And it also did really well at Venice because wasn't Emma Stone selected?
Yeah, she won Best Actress, yeah.
This is the one. One I'm most looking forward to because it's about Hollywood crushed hopes and dreams.
The movie I'm looking most forward to also premiered at the Toronto Film Festival. That is Walter Hill's Reassignment. Have you heard about that?
No.
It's about a hitman who goes and gets a sex change operation from Sigourney Weaver and ends up being a hit woman and played by Michelle Rodriguez. And apparently everybody hates this movie so much. It's so politically incorrect. And apparently the people of Toronto were just outraged at this movie and are really angry at Walter Hill, which makes me just want to see it so badly.
Well, it's a shame.
And I've always loved Walter Hill.
Walter Hill's great.
The Long Riders?
Oh, yeah. Well, he made Bullet in the Head with Stallone a couple years ago, which actually is pretty good, but he was really... I mean, in the 80s.
Oh,
I mean,
yes.
Hard Times with Charles Bronson was his very... Yeah, Walter Hill. So, Reassignment. I asked Chris Clark if they were going to show Reassignment. If they were going to show Reassignment at SLIF, and he said no. So I guess we'll have to wait. I don't think it comes out, actually, until next spring.
It's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah. Nocturnal Animals is another one because Jake Gyllenhaal has got a great cast, and that got pushed back to December 9th.
Oh, yeah. Oscar bait.
Yeah, because it was supposed to come out this fall, but it's really doing well in the awards circuit. And,
All right, so... La La Land, I guess something to look forward to. Maybe that's the front runner for the Oscars here in September. Who knows?
One of them, man.
Yeah, it's one of them for sure. There hasn't been too much this past year to be,
Well, it's still early.
Yeah, it's still early because the fall's the big breakout.
Yeah, so.
All right, Jim, you said somebody died you wanted to talk about. I can't remember who you said it was.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you
can talk about her first, yes.
Okay, Charmaine Carr from The Sound of Music.
She played played Liesel von Trapp. Apparently, she's the first one of these actors who played these kids to pass away.
I am 16, going on 17. I know that I'm naive. Fellows I meet may tell me I'm sweet, and willingly I believe.
Yeah. Well, I saw that she was 73 when I saw that headline. I thought that was, they said, Sound of Music star passes, and I thought it was Julie Andrews.
I think Julie Andrews is 78, or maybe 79.
But her character, Liesel, was supposed to be 16 going on 17. That's the only film this actress did. I mean, she did a TV movie, and that's it.
She's very pretty and sort of sexy. I didn't see Sound of Music in my life until last year when they had a 50th anniversary screening somewhere, and I went and saw it. I get the appeal. I get why it's so beloved.
Yes, and you can't go wrong with the family wholesomeness of the Von Trapps. But Liesel is one of those names that was unusual. But my late great boss at the St. Louis Globe Democrat, Daryl Schultz, named his daughter Liesel.
So
Liesel sweet. Schultz.
RIP to Liesel. Our Charmaine Carr was her name. Jim, who are you talking about?
Well, I'm talking about a wonderful artist, animator, voice actor by the name of C. Martin Croker. The animation world was rocked Saturday night when he passed away.
When
at the
Croker
age.
Croaked?
He did. He would probably appreciate that joke, too.
Yeah.
But, he passed away at the way too young age of 54. He does have a feature film credit, though. He was the voice of Dr. Weird in Aqua Teen Hunger Force : movie film for theaters that came out in 2007. He was one of the shining lights at Cartoon Network's Adult Swim, gaining fame as Zorro Dvorak, the sidekick to a Space Ghost in Space Ghost Coast to Coast, I have a personal connection with him. When I first started doing caricatures in 89 at Atlanta, I worked for an animation studio that he was working at. Wonderful man. He's right up your alley, Tom, because he invited me to his home, and he's just stuffed with this great movie stuff.
Oh, yeah.
This incredible Keiju, giant monster collection. Just wonderful stuff, and a heck of a 16mm collection. I was invited to one of his outdoor screenings, and I kind of lost track with him over the years until I reconnected with him on Facebook, and then I went down to Atlanta for a visit, and he was doing a thing with the Plaza Theater in which he would bring his films in every few Saturdays and show them to people in the audience. And he was doing a thing then called Christmas in July. It was all holiday-themed cartoons, and it was, range from the ridiculous being an episode of Rocket Robin Hood involving Santa to the sublime, which was Richard Williams' Oscar-winning adaptation of Christmas Carol. And I'm so glad I got to hang with him a little bit after the screening, because he talked about his brushes with celebrity, talked about introducing Mel Torme to Betty Page, two icons meeting each other, and just a heck of a sweet, really nice guy. So this was a real shame.
How old was he?
54.
54, yeah.
Way too young. Way too young.
So R.I.P. Wow.
Sweetheart.
Mr. Croker. What was his first name?
C. Martin Croker. I called him Clay.
So R.I.P. to that guy. We got about a minute. Anybody else want to talk about anything else? No?
Shakespeare on the Streets was a big success in Maplewood. Brought 1,700 people there Friday night.
Saturday night. This is We Are Movie Geeks, not We Are Theater Geeks, We Are Shakespeare Geeks, but that's okay.
Well, one of your junior geeks,
that's right,
Steve Tronin.
Tronicek.
Yeah. Tronicek was in it.
And he was Juliet, you said?
Yes, and then he was one of the buddies of the Hamlet group.
Any reviews, movies for WeMovieGeeks.com?
What was this past weekend's Tivoli Late Show? Did you attend any of that?
No, they had Psycho. I did not. I went down to
Late Night Grindhouse?
I went down to Moolah. Actually, I went down to Moolah both nights. Late Night Grindhouse was I Drink Your Blood, which was so spectacular. And I tell you what, I saw the Disappointment Room Saturday night, and then I raced down to the Moolah, and there was more entertainment value in 5 minutes of I Drink Your Blood than in the entire Disappointment Room. What a fun movie. Andy's doing the original Phantasm from 1980. It's a 4K transfer, whatever that means. I guess it just means it's super spectacular looking, and that'll be
a good movie.
October 13th or 14th or something like that.
Well, I hope Andy got a good crowd this
weekend.
Oh, he
got a pretty decent crowd, yeah. Alright, well, we gotta wrap this up, doggone it. We'll be back next weekend. We can review Miss Peregrine's School for whatever it is.
Peculiar
Kids, and we'll review Denial, and I'm sure we'll review some other things. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman,
Jim Batts,
Lynn Venhouse,
and we are signing off.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather.
Oh, nice, Dave. Hello, darling.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather, hip. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash. Black leather, crash. Black leather, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward in the battle, dear chaps.
Black leather, smash.
You happy in your work, Johnny?
By the lift!